Welcome to my podcast, Patient First. I'm Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm an Australian registered specialist plastic surgeon with 17 years of surgical experience. As the scientific convener of the Non-Surgical Symposium and a former president of the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, my goal is to help patients navigate the complex world of both surgical and non-surgical aesthetics, but by understanding what is evidence and what is not. This, I hope, is going to help them realize their aesthetic goals safely and in a manner consistent with good clinical practice. This podcast is an extension of that legacy. My aim is to empower you to make the most educated decisions about your choices concerning your face and body aesthetics and your safety. Each episode, I will be bringing to you cutting-edge science and exploring surgical procedures in a modern, evidence-based approach to aesthetics. Plus, I will be inviting some esteemed guests in my podcast in the future to offer new perspectives. Tune in each week as together we explore the next frontier of surgical and non-surgical aesthetics. Welcome back to the podcast, Patient First. This episode is about credentials count and your pathway to safe cosmetic surgery. I am your host, Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm a registered specialist plastic surgeon with a commitment to evidence-based plastic surgery. In this episode, I'm going to explore the important qualifications necessary for safe plastic surgery. I'll discuss the crucial role between plastic surgery and cosmetic surgery, the risk that's posed to patients by unqualified practitioners, and how, by choosing a qualified, registered specialist surgeon, you can enhance your quality of care and your safety. My hope is that you will come away from this episode empowered with knowledge necessary to make a safe choice and also the knowledge to spot an underqualified individual on social media and elsewhere. With that introduction behind us, let's talk about the disclosure. In the interest of full disclosure, mandated by the Australian Health Regulator, my name is Dr. Naveen Somaya. I'm a registered medical practitioner and a specialist plastic surgeon. Specialist registration in surgery and my area of specialty practice is plastic surgery. My APRA registration number is MED00118989. I wish to advise my listeners that information provided in this podcast is of a general nature only and does not constitute formal medical advice. Any surgery or invasive procedures carries risks. You should seek a second opinion from a suitably qualified health practitioner, and surgery results vary. What results are experienced by one person need not necessarily be experienced by another person. With that introduction behind us, let's dive deep into this topic where credentials count. In the realm of plastic surgery and cosmetic surgery, the word or the title surgeon is your interface between your professional world and the community and the broader world outside. So patients and consumers who see the word surgeon take a meaning that this surgeon is meant to be a specialist who has been appropriately trained, appropriately qualified. So this word has an intended meaning. Unfortunately, this was a loophole that was being exploited by people with no more than a basic medical degree who self-titled themselves using the title surgeon. And we all know, based on the information and the media exposure that we saw about the poor patient outcomes and patient harm in the course of delivery of substandard cosmetic surgery. Thanks to regulatory and government intervention, the title surgeon is now a protected title. This happened in September 2023, and this is a very important step in ensuring that your credentials do count and your proper credentials in some way provide a statutory safety net for safe surgery. Now, who can use the title surgeon? The title surgeon is now a protected title. In other words, only three groups of medical practitioners can use the title surgeon. The first group is obviously registered specialist surgeons in varying disciplines of surgery can use the title surgeon. The other group is registered specialist ophthalmologist or eye specialist can use the title surgeon. The other group is registered specialist gynecologists who can use the title surgeon. The surgeon now has agreed meaning and now forms an important part of a statutory safety for patients considering cosmetic surgery. Along with the protection of the title surgeon, the restriction of the title plastic surgeon to only those who are registered in the recognized medical specialty of plastic surgery adds the second layer of support. Now, why is this important? This is important because when it comes to patient safety, truth and transparency is the key factor that underpins patient safety. Doctors expect the patients to trust them, and patients in turn expect the doctor to tell them the truth and be transparent about information, about titles, about pre-procedure preparation, post-procedure outcome, downtime, risks, benefits and complications as a part of the informed consent process. If the particular practitioner is not transparent with the use of the title, that is where trust takes a beating. So we are thankful that the surgeon, the title of this word surgeon, is now a protected title restricted to certain specialties only, which will go a long way in ensuring patients can now rely on the word surgeon by practitioners, that it means something. It means appropriate training. It means appropriate registration status. It means a commitment to continuing ongoing learning throughout the career of that particular surgical specialist. This has to be good for patient safety. Naturally, if you're a listener, you'll be wondering, where can I go and verify is my specialist a surgeon? The most authoritative website that you can check your surgeon's credentials is the National Regulator APRA website, ahpra.gov.au. This is a place where you could type in your surgeon's name and then see if the surgeon is a registered medical specialist. Number one, tick. Does the surgeon have specialist registration? Tick. Is the specialist registration in surgery? And what is the specialty area of practice? Now, plastic surgeons will have the specialty area of plastics as plastic surgery. There are two societies of plastic surgery in Australia. One is called ASAPS, the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons. And the other one is ASPS. Most of the membership is, most people have membership of both societies. The ASPS is Australian Society of Plastic Surgeons. Now, if you go to their websites and check your surgeon, if he or she is a member of these two websites, it'll tell you if it is the case or not the case. Now, you can be assured that to become a member of these two societies, you have to be a registered specialist surgeon in the recognized discipline of plastic surgery. You have to have a commitment to lifelong continuous learning to improve your skill set, your knowledge base, and keep up to date with what is new and on the horizon. It is this commitment to lifetime learning is what makes a specialist good, up-to-date, current, and able to deliver best possible care in a manner that is not just ethical, but also evidence-based to your patients. For those of my listeners who are considering cosmetic surgery, I'd like to tell you a good process to find a credentialed surgeon for your cosmetic surgery. But before I tell you the steps to find a credentialed surgeon, it is important to emphasize on why. The why is important here. Now, if you're planning to consider a operation on your heart, like cardiac surgery, every single practitioner who's performing cardiac surgery in Australia is a registered specialist cardiac surgeon, qualified FRACS. So it is a homogenous group of people and there's no ambiguity about the credentials of that particular. The same goes with neurosurgery, the same goes with urology and every other major surgical discipline. However, when it comes to cosmetic surgery, you've got lots of people playing in this space. Majority of them are specialist plastic surgeons. Some of them are non-surgeons, non-registered surgeons. So it is entirely up to the consumer or the patient to do their research, to find out if the credentials of that particular person and the qualifications are appropriate and how to find them. The first place is to check with the national regulator, APRA website, ahpra.gov.au. You can find out if your practitioner is a registered specialist surgeon or not. If the registered specialist surgeon has got specialty expertise in the area of plastic surgery or not, you can then ask your GP for recommendation. Your GP is usually a good person to tell you because they would have seen the plastic surgeons work over the years, and said, and they give you a recommendation which is basically in your best interest. You can also look up websites like ASAPS, ASAPS, which is the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, and ASPS, which is Australian Society of Plastic Surgeons, for a credentialed plastic surgeon who is a member of these societies to get some details and areas of expertise. You could also look up third-party review sites like Google and realself.com, where patients who have had experience with these surgeons do post reviews and explain their experience. And that usually helps you with the data set that you need to make a reasonably good decision. Once you have shortlisted one, I strongly recommend you shortlist two more, either a second consultation or a second and a third consultation, because then you have experienced consultative process through surgeon one, you go through surgeon two and surgeon three. Yes, I acknowledge that this costs time and money, but it at the same time, it offers you a perspective from a surgeon who you may or may not like. You may or may not connect with the practice staff. You may feel that your time was not respected. You may feel that you were not listened to. You were not cared for. You seem to be dealing with people who are already in a rush. In some practices, you might encounter sales processes that are quite pushy. In some, you may not. So whether you are comfortable with the infrastructure around surgeon one or surgeon two or surgeon three, that will help you make the decision of whom to pick. Ultimately, go with your gut, because you also have to feel that you will be looked after, you will be cared for, having access to information support before, during, and after the operation as well. So this is something that we strongly recommend, that once you've shortlisted a surgeon, have a second opinion and have a third opinion if necessary. In my patient-first, patient-focused practice, we support our patients throughout the journey with adequate information, plenty of information, open access to questions and answers. I always ask the patient, where did they do their research? And this is what I find very interesting and part of that I've just shared with you in my podcast, the natural pathway of how patients do their research. A word of mouth recommendation is one of the best, because then you can relate to not only the patient, that patient's experience, and that surgeon's commitment to quality and safety. Now, we always ask patients if they've had a second opinion, and we mention that the benefits of the second opinion in every single case, but some patients may choose not to have it, or some patients may choose to have it, or some patients offer the information that I've seen you, but I've also seen two other people, which is music to my ears, because that's perfect, because that's when the patient can make a very objective, unbiased information as to who would be best aligned to provide them their care when it comes to cosmetic surgery. In my view, protecting the integrity of the profession of plastic surgery is not just an obligation. It is a social cause, and it is very important to ensure that that level of integrity is maintained in the specialty, because the benefits have to be reaped by the broader community. Plastic surgery as a specialty has been in existence for thousands of years and has provided patients, individuals, communities, and societies wonderful care, helping them treat some of the problems that has plagued societies from time immemorial. When I started seeing patients being featured on the front page of major newspapers having had poor plastic surgical outcomes, or in some cases, body harm, I was very concerned. This coincided with the small uptick in the number of patients admitted to public hospital emergency departments having had cosmetic surgery elsewhere, and found that the practitioners who provided the initial care were unable to provide the aftercare. This happened to be at the time when I was a president of ASAPS, the Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, and in talking to my colleagues across the country, we found a similar uptick happening. So when these bad news made news, the regulators took note, the government took note, they instituted a whole heap of commissions, submissions to come up with a safety plan. We, as the Society of Australasian Society of Aesthetic Plastic Surgeons, along with ASPS, were invited to make submissions to, and we did make submissions in favor of patient safety. The net result is the new guidelines that we have seen and which is now in force from the 1st of July 2023, that clearly and categorically targets the type of cosmetic practice that has to be ethical and evidence-based, and also targets the advertising guidelines that is used in cosmetic surgery and cosmetic practice. Now, when we look at a person as a specialist, they may train for 5 years or 6 years, but their career lasts for 35 years. The training, the commitment to education in that 35 years is what translates to good, current, ethical, evidence-based practice. ASAPS as an organization is very proud of being the education provider for specialist plastic surgeons in cosmetic surgery with a very rich legacy since 1978. When I was a president, we helped to create more content offerings, more teaching programs to engage membership so that we could upskill our membership to the current global best practice. All our events, we have invited speakers from overseas who come, who lecture, share their tips, knowledge, and techniques, and that ultimately becomes a great learning experience. Currently, I'm the chairman of the Non-Surgical Symposium, which is Australia's largest meeting on cosmetic procedures with a rich legacy of over 12 years. This meeting is about empowering practitioners in a manner that is evidence-based and patient-friendly, and putting the patient front and center in every single aspect of what they do. So these are treatment of cosmetic nature, such as botulinum toxin, dermal fillers, energy devices, lasers, skincare, advanced skincare, and anything new in the horizon. We've been privileged to be popular, and we also have the privilege of having a scientific advisory team that represents every single healthcare professional involved in this industry to give us feedback so that we not only keep the content relevant, current, ethical, and evidence-based. At this point, I'd like to share with my listeners, what is the pathway to becoming a specialist surgeon in Australia? Now, once you finish your undergraduate medical degree and graduate with an MBBS, you can then decide to go to any specialist pathway. For those who want to become a surgeon, they have to undertake additional surgical training in clinical jobs and work towards a surgical qualification. The entry into a AMC accredited surgical training program in any specialty like plastic surgery is delivered by the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons. So if you want to be a specialist plastic surgeon, you have to get entry into a training program in plastic surgery. Now, this training program takes about 5 years. At the end of it, you have an exam that qualifies you as a specialist. Once you are qualified as a specialist, you get FRACS after your name, and that allows you to become eligible to be registered by APRA as a specialist surgeon in the specialty of plastic surgery. It also allows you to be registered as a specialist by Medicare Australia and also be recognized as a specialist by the Commonwealth government as well as the state governments for purposes of employment in major public hospitals and teaching hospitals in the country. This is a standard of specialist surgery in Australia. My pathway was very similar. I trained and had the privilege of training in Melbourne, Sydney, Hobart, and Geelong as a part of the RACS accredited plastic surgical training program. And I have had lovely mentors, very knowledgeable mentors who took me under the wing and taught me the skills, the knowledge that was essential to make me a plastic surgeon. Now, we stand on the shoulder of giants who show us the way, and it is our way to give back and educate the next generation of surgeons. So as much as I have been mentored, I'm now a mentor and a trainer for the next generation of plastic surgeons who are going through the same process that I did many years ago. In addition to the FRACS and plastic surgery that I undertook training here, I did a PhD many years ago focusing on full-time research on eyelids, and in particular, eyelid reanimation and facial nerve paralysis. This was a very interesting phase of my life because you did not do anything other than delve deep into science, pull out the most archaic little literature piece to try and make sense of it, talk to like-minded scientists and collaborators to see if we could leverage our findings together and collaborate and sometimes cooperate and come up with something that is slightly better. In some cases, we had to participate and collaborate with other disciplines, not just necessarily plastic surgery, including sometimes biomechanics, sometimes physiology, sometimes microsurgery, and sometimes industry, for making sure that we can bring out the best possible solution for a problem to benefit the patients that are not just current, but it's also evidence-based. That was an exciting part of my career. And in hindsight, I think that has given me and equipped me with good skills, analytical skills, research skills, good communication skills, and the ability to come up with solutions for things that otherwise been seen as too hard. And as we say, that a PhD will equip a surgeon to be a surgeon scientist, and that has been a wonderful experience in my view. I also went overseas to Atlanta to train under preeminent American surgeons as a part of my post-Frax fellowship in cosmetic surgery and post-Frax fellowship in oculoplastic or eyelid surgery. The wonderful mentors I worked under, Drs. Fouad Nahai, Dr. Rod Hester, Dr. Sunny McCord, and the late Dr. Mark Cordner, were very, very eminent American surgeons who not only mentored me, taught me a lot, and helped me realize that the pathway to quality safety is through continuing education and giving back through teaching to the next generation is a noble cause. And the reason I tell you my training pathway is to highlight the long, rigorous training program and the training duration required by a specialist plastic surgeon to become a registered specialist in plastic surgery. So if you're looking for a registered specialist in plastic surgery, you can be assured that this particular individual has undergone very high level of intense training to ensure that he or she can provide you the best in class of plastic surgery that is not just ethical, but also evidence-based. Plastic surgery and the term cosmetic surgery are used interchangeably, implying that they're one and the same. So let me just backtrack a little bit. Plastic surgical skills used to restore normal is called reconstructive plastic surgery. When I say restore normal, it is something that was normal but has been taken away either by an accident, cancer, or a birth defect. In that case, you use surgical skills or plastic surgical skills to restore what is normal and help the patient. Now, cosmetic plastic surgery is when you use those identical or exact surgical techniques or skills to enhance what is normal. In other words, even someone has features of aging, they are still normal, but they're affected by the aging process. Or in some cases, you haven't even aged, but still you would like to have a cosmetic enhancement. The techniques are identical. The indications are different. They are like two sides of the same coin. On one side, you have reconstructive plastic surgery, and the other side, you have cosmetic plastic surgery. Unfortunately, in this entire narrative of cosmetic versus plastic, people have selectively chose to omit the word reconstructive from the word reconstructive plastic surgery to call it plastic surgery, implying that plastic surgery deals only with accidents, traumas, and burns, and cosmetic surgery is somehow an entirely unique discipline that is not in any way related to plastic surgery. It can't be further from the truth. They're both identical disciplines with similar techniques used to improve form and function, and only the indications vary. So this is a very important definition. So when you look at people who practice cosmetic surgery, majority of the cosmetic surgery is practiced by people who are registered specialist plastic surgeons. Now, plastic surgery has had an extraordinary legacy of healing for many, many years. And I will touch upon this in my next podcast. But it started off thousands of years ago in ancient India, where people used to lose their noses as a part of punishment, either military or social. And there was a society's need to reconstruct the chopped off noses to restore a sense of normalcy. So operations were devised where a piece of skin in the form of a flap was used from the forehead, turned down to reconstruct the nose. And this is a remarkable operation that is even practiced today to reconstruct the nose if it was damaged due to cancer or trauma. Now, this is the humble origins of plastic surgery. And along the years, it has provided mainly solutions to what was bothering society at that time. So through terms of war and peace, plastic surgical injuries were common, and plastic surgical solutions and surgeons upskilled, upgraded quickly to provide relief to those particular patients. If it was a burn, the surgery was burns. If it was a traumatic nose amputation, the reconstruction of the nose became an issue. If it was a congenital problem with the child, plastic surgical techniques were used to repair those defects to allow a semblance of normalcy. So surgery and plastic surgery are medical interventions that are designed to provide solutions. So depending on the era in which we live, there is a pressing problem that is treated with forms of plastic surgery. So if you think of in historical times, people who were involved in sword dueling lost their noses. The noses had to be reconstructed. In World War I, the injuries were different. In World War II, the injuries were different. Post-World War, it was predominantly traumatic injuries, cancer reconstruction, and so on and so forth. As we approach the 90s, with the techniques and technology becoming a bit more sophisticated in plastic surgery and more refined and more elegant, and the society is now more affluent, there was the need for more aesthetic surgery or more cosmetic surgery. Aesthetic surgery was never in the background. It was always present, but it was restricted to a very small group of people who could either have access to or who could afford it. Now, with the world changing, with the affluence in the world changing, the information in the world changing, people are living longer, people are new experiencing larger amounts of disposable income, it was natural that you would then spend your money on things to help you look better. And that is why over the last 35 years, we have seen a gradual uptick in the popularity of cosmetic surgery, which is now beginning to define a lot of plastic surgery, like how in World War II, post-World War II, traumatic injuries defined plastic surgery. In 2023, social media is everywhere. So it is natural that social media will promote things that are cosmetic surgery, aesthetic enhancements of a wide variety of conditions. So you have people promoting procedures. You have influencers having procedures and then promoting them. You have influencers doing product placements and advertising additional products to showcase its benefits. It is very important to understand that when the uptake of this is easily available, information is easy to find, treatments are easily accessible because there's a proliferation of treatment options based on the demand. The only thing that is going to keep you safe is if you find a proceduralist or a practitioner or a surgeon who is ethical and is credentialed. It's very important because behind the flashing lights, behind the glitz and the glamour, you still have to find the core physician who is considered, credentialed, ethical, and evidence-based, because this is the only thing that is going to get you the best possible outcome for you. Cosmetic surgery is invasive surgery, and cosmetic surgery is an invasive medical procedure with real risks. So when we see patients portrayed on media and social media, people who are in the public eye, who've had either major surgery or major transformational surgery, like a total face and body makeover, all we see is two snapshots of their journey. It is a bit like trying to review a movie by watching two stills of the movie. What is missing is the preoperative preparation. What is missing is the postoperative pain, the postoperative pathway, the recovery phase, the discomfort that came with it. Were there any complications? Was this operation done once, done twice, done three times? Was there a revision? Has the photos been touched up or made up? These are all things to consider, because depending on how much of surgery you perform on a body, your body still sees surgery as a controlled injury to its very existence. So it will respond in a physiological manner as it has done for thousands and thousands of years. And that process is the natural, regular process of healing, including scar formation, with the potential of things going wrong along the way. So for all of us to think that having a cosmetic surgical operation is easy, it is quick, it can be done in a lunchtime, it is important to be realistic. And this is why we emphasize on choosing a practitioner who puts patients first, who is open, is honest, is informative, is transparent, and paints a very realistic picture of your journey and a realistic picture of your intended outcome. If somebody tells you perfection can be achieved, you and I both know that is not possible. Patient safety in cosmetic surgery is a topic that is very close to my heart, and I've been privileged to be part of ASAPS and contribute to enhancing patient safety awareness and contributing to patient safety in more ways than one. And all of us are familiar with the guidelines that have come out 1st of July 2023 that have very clear and prescriptive standards for cosmetic practice and advertising cosmetic services. And I'm sure by the end of 12 months after the introduction, there will be more options to look at the data gathered and improvise on the guidelines. One of the things that I would be very keen to see introduced in the patient safety guidelines in cosmetic surgery is what we refer to as the five pillars of surgical safety. And these five pillars, as you would guess, are very, very logical, very intuitive, and literally a no-brainer. It is surgery performed by a surgeon. It is anesthesia performed by a specialist anesthetist. It is surgery performed in an accredited, licensed facility that ticks all the boxes for patient safety. The surgeon to be available to provide aftercare, and the surgeon should have admitting rights in a hospital should you need your aftercare to be escalated to a hospital admission. These are kind of the five basic pillars of surgical safety that you can expect every single specialist surgeon to have. And as a consequence, when you use credentials to choose your provider, you can expect that there's a certain amount of statutory safety and a safety framework that comes with it. In this podcast, I've summarized why credentials are important and how to go about choosing a surgeon who is credentialed to deliver ethical, evidence-based cosmetic surgery to give you your results. I've also discussed how to go about doing your research to find such a qualified and credentialed surgeon. I've also mentioned some of the pitfalls in choosing an unqualified or unregistered surgeon and how that will impact your personal safety and your outcomes. Now, in a patient-first approach, remember, you have to be in the driver's seat at all times. So when you see and consult with a surgeon, and if you don't feel right, trust your gut. And if you don't like what you hear, you're well within your rights to ask more questions and dig deeper to ensure that the person you're interviewing is actually the right one for your surgery. Thank you. And I hope you had a informative session listening to this podcast. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Patient First. I hope you found this podcast useful. Remember, I'm always listening. And if you have any questions you would like me to answer on the show or upcoming episodes, please connect with me via my clinic website. Thank you.